Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome. I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, it's Therapist Kelly.
Okay, Kelly, the hiccups.
I'm good. I'm good. I had the hiccups seriously 3 minutes before the show, and it was like they were like, "Nah, I'm done here. I'm good."
Okay, good.
Yeah, just, thank God.
You got scared because we were talking about people having them
for the rest of their lives.
And the rest of their life. That's shoot you up with horse tranquilizer.
Well, I was saying ketamine actually sounds like a fun idea. Maybe I should fake the hiccups.
How was your week?
I'm trying to think. It was good. Yeah, it's been good. Well, you know, I hike all the time. Mm-hmm. And now I just heard that the hiking trail near me is going to be closed for 4 months starting in September.
Why?
They're doing renovations. And I'm like so down because that's like my jam.
Which
I know
is
you
the
get
one
it.
That you use?
Fryman.
Fryman. Oh, my.
Yes.
That's sad.
So I feel like you know everything about topography. And like in Los Angeles, so you have to help me find like another one.
Oh, boy.
You know everything and their mother about, like,
traffic. No, I
traffic.
Don't. Not anymore. Traffic, yes.
Traffic. You're like a traffic woman.
Because I am obsessed with avoiding traffic. This is why I moved out to Thousand Oaks.
I don't blame you. I get it.
I can't stand it. Every time I get into the, like, well, this is the other day, just in the valley, like around Van Nuys Boulevard, just getting here
this afternoon.
It's like bumper to bumper
in
the middle of the day.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Anyway, so, I had...
What happened with you?
Oh, well, we had some fun, but also had a lot of stress. My two loves, my Prowler and Puppy Cat.
Yes.
And Prowler has been losing some weight.
And oh, no.
So, you know, that's something to be pay attention to, mm-hmm. even though he's otherwise very healthy. His coat is shiny.
Mm-hmm.
He's very playful. All the same behavioral patterns. He's very annoying and adorable.
Okay.
You know, he bats you on the leg when you're going to the bathroom and says, "What about me?
Oh, my
God,
that's
me."
So cute.
He's so funny. He'll jump up on your lap. He's hysterical. Anyway, so we took him to... there's a place called Banfield, which is...
Heard of that.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
And because I've used them before, and they have Saturday appointments.
Right.
So we were able to get in, because Christopher has to go with me because they are unruly in the car. They just...
Really?
...have panic attacks, like serious, serious panic attacks. Part of why we never take them to the vet. They're indoor cats. They don't encounter other animals.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have fleas. They don't have, you know, any reason to go, and they've been really healthy, and they're 11 and a half. Anyway, we walk in with this... issue about the weight loss. She does blood work and all that, asks us to leave the cat for an hour.
Okay.
We come back to pick him up, and now he's got an eye problem. His left eye is not dilating. That wasn't a problem when we brought him in.
Oh.
So now we're in a tizzy and a panic and trying to get a mobile home vet, and then I just found another vet through a friend of mine, and so we're going to do that. But apparently, Christopher's in contact with Banfield today because I was in sessions.
Sure.
And so they're going to, they did find something with his thyroid, but I don't think that causes
the eye problem,
which might be something called Horner syndrome, but it's supposed to self-correct, but it's a sympathetic, parasympathetic nervous system issue.
Do you think that the cat got it from another animal?
No, it's not a contagious thing.
Okay.
It's an internal thing, something to do with the nervous system, and it could happen by trauma, but it wasn't just not nervous trauma, but like head trauma, like a car accident or something like that. So I don't know if they dropped him on his head or something. I have no idea because he didn't have this. Or if literally just the anxiety of being in the car and the new people
it.
And the vet and all that. But he does seem to be better. And again, all of his behavioral patterns are completely normal. In
That's
fact,
good.
He bit his brother on the neck this morning to wrestle because they're like professional wrestlers. They bite each other and then they kick each other with their back legs. Anyway. So
I'm
say
sorry.
A prayer for
I will.
Prowler.
I absolutely will. Poor
baby.
Guy.
Oh. I mean, he looks great. He's size 13 and a half pounds, but this cat used to be 18 pounds.
Wow. That's a lot of weight.
Yeah, it is. But that's over the course of well over a year.
Okay.
So part
okay.
of it just seemed like, you know, he's getting older. Mm-hmm. He's a little less active.
Sure.
You know, just lies around a little bit more and maybe eats less. But anyway, he does seem healthy.
Oh, sorry.
Yes. Thank you, honey. Thank you. Anyway.
Let's talk about
last
week.
Things.
Yes, exactly. So last week we had One Bad Mother. I love that
mother.
Name. It's a podcast from Biz and Teresa, very funny gals who basically talk about parenting and mothering, and we kind of really got into it, and different styles of parenting and judgment and poop and all that
good
stuff. Pretty
much took all the shame out of parenting.
Absolutely.
You know, whatever you think that you're doing wrong, you probably are, but so is everybody else.
Exactly.
Right?
I love that. Yeah, it was really nice. So if you missed that show, you can tune in and to hear about that.
Okay, today we have a great guest. He's the author of Love is the Power, Robert Williams, co-founder of 108 Inc., a Portland-based innovative technology company. He's the inventor and developer of quantum code technology. Robert's research has provided scientific breakthroughs in field-based technologies, consciousness, and human potential. Robert has also enjoyed success as a musician and educator. He taught music at the university level and recorded and performed with such artists as the Beach Boys, Paul Horn, and Charles Lloyd. After having a near-death experience in 1979, Robert devoted all of his time and energy toward researching consciousness and subtle energy along with conventional physics and medicine. Wow, welcome, Robert.
Thank you, Dr. Deborah, and thank you, Kelly. Thanks for inviting me on your show.
Oh, we're so happy to have you.
I'm not going to sing because I will spare the embarrassment, but let's go surfing now, everybody.
Oh, my God.
Come on, let's party with me.
I love it. Hey, did you used to sing with the Beach Boys professionally? I mean, it sounds just like
them. Yeah, of course, right?
Exactly.
You were... Wow.
You know, I have this thing. My husband makes fun of me, but on my birthday, and it happens all the time, people sing on my voicemail, and it's like my pet peeve.
I know. I do it to you all the time, because.
Every time. And I have this thing, and it's not that it's just bad voices. I don't know what it is, but it's only the happy birthday. Isn't that funny? So anyway, I wanted to share that.
Right.
But when were you, when did you perform with the Beach Boys?
1977 through 1979. Mm-hmm. So just that 3-year chunk, but it was very full and actually an amazing experience with them. And then I went on to other things.
Do you know that that was my first concert? I was 4 years old. It was at Washington, D.C., the Monument, and that was my first concert.
How
so
cute.
I think it was
Beach
like,
Boys?
Yeah, I think it was like 82 or something like that. But still, you paved the way.
So
they really are the American band, you know. They've been around so long. They had such wonderful music, and the inside stories are full of trauma and illness and tragedy. But when they sing Good Vibrations or Serpent Safari, all those go out the window, and everybody's happy.
Oh, that's sweet.
That's so nice.
That is true. So, oh my God, we have to dive in. In addition to wanting to talk about your book, if you'll just get right in there, what was your near-death experience? What was that?
They call it a near-death experience, and at the time, I had never heard of that idea or concept. I was very ill, going on 3 years. The doctors had no idea what was wrong. And there was one point, late 1978, where they said, if you continue degrading and getting sicker and sicker like you are, we don't know why everything's breaking down, your organs, your liver, your kidneys, your everything, but we know that if you don't improve, you're going to be dead in 6 months.
Oh my.
So
oh
they my wanted
God.
Me to go in the hospital and monitor me. Mm-hmm. I actually had grown up as an odd duck and had already been meditating since I was a teenager. So 1979, I was 25, and the idea of something more than our physical lives was one of my beliefs. And although I had not had a direct experience of anything other than my physical life, I had seen auras and seen nature spirits and had certain hints that we were more than our physiology. So one morning I got up and I stumbled around and tripped and fell over and hit my head, and next thing I was looking at my body on the bathroom floor.
Wow. Wow.
And I realized, oh, okay, I'm dying. And I wasn't really resisting that idea, that thought. I had made a lot of money, I'd done a lot of things, and I didn't really have an idea of a passion for continuing on with my life. So in a sense, that was a good thing, because I just let go and saw my body and just allowed the process to occur, which immediately after seeing my body on the bathroom floor, I was just light. And I don't know how else to describe it. It was just, everything was beautiful and perfect. I didn't see things, but just that state of reality where everything's fine. Then I became separate from that light just enough so that I could perceive the light. So when I was light, there wasn't any commentary going on. There wasn't a mind that's saying this or that. But then there was a little bit of individuality that separated from that bliss or that fulfilled state, and I was given a choice to go back or to go back into the light or come back to my body. I asked if I had a purpose. The answer was yes. So that's where the story gets interesting, because I slowly went back into my body. It wasn't immediate, and I saw a bunch of things, and I wrote about it in my book, and there's lots of stories I can tell you about each different layer of ourselves that behind the veil of our physiologies. When I first got back into my physical body, I was living in Santa Barbara, a very beautiful time of year, March, gardens by the ocean, and I remember first kind of wiggling my toes. I'm back in my body and hearing these amazing sounds in nature, the insects, the birds, the sound of the ocean. We've all heard those beautiful sounds. I was at such a awakened state that the sounds meant more than they had ever previously meant to me. And I understood in terms of a direct experience or a realization that we are one with nature. We're not, we can say that, and we can kind of get it. You know, our bodies come out of the earth. Our bodies are, the elements in our bodies are found in the earth and as part of the system of this planet. But we kind of feel like we're walking around and, you know, we are either in nature or somewhat separate, but we're not. And our intelligence, our fundamental intelligence, our life force, is the intelligence of nature. So I realized that the cosmic, you could say the innate intelligence of nature that was governing the waves on the ocean and the wind blowing through the trees and the insects doing their little sounds and all these things that were happening was the same intelligence that started my own heart beating and my breath.
So beautiful.
So that was quite a realization. And then my head, then the pain came back, and, you know, I was still miserable, but I had that experience, and I pursued some of the things that I saw in these different dimensions and put in my resignation in the music business and went on from there.
Wow. Unbelievable.
But how did you get healthy? Like, what? Because obviously you're darn healthy. You're here speaking to us 40 years later almost.
Yeah. At first, I got healthier. So it wasn't an immediate spontaneous healing, like I've also read about.
Mm-hmm.
But I was healthy enough to pack up and drive south of L.A. and on. So it wasn't until years later, actually until the early 90s, that they discovered massive amounts of poisons in my body.
Oh my God.
And that was the thing that was causing me to, you know, to have health issues and almost killed me. Arsenic way over the chart. You know, those stories of putting arsenic in somebody's food and that slow death. Well, I had arsenic so, you know, like there's a green zone, a yellow zone, red zone, way over the red. The doctor that spotted that said, you should be dead. This is not possible. And other things, other poisons. So that kind of keeps skipping ahead. But in 1979, I was able to continue my life and continue doing the best I could for my health. And, it, you know, it's a good question. What was more important for me, even though I was not well, was to understand the what was at the basis of our life, what was at the basis of consciousness and our interactivity as human beings. And that was just, I'm married now with a daughter, so it was just me, you know, and I was not afraid of death anymore. I was very suspicious of the idea that once we die, you know, that was it, no more, or we go to some place, we can't come back, whatever it is. Those ideas were resolved in that experience in 1979. Mm-hmm. So that got me into understanding all kinds of wonderful things that are right before us, like how plants grow and how the winds blow and how the clouds are formed and things like that that are corresponding to our own body and our own interaction with our aliveness and our consciousness.
Wow. So
that's a beautiful story.
Do you feel like before all of this happened, I'll call it the near-death experience, like were you at all spiritual? Or it was like, nope, you were just living your life normally and didn't really think about this kind of stuff?
Spiritual in the sense that I saw auras and I knew there was more to life than what met the eye, and I called that my spiritual life. I was fascinated with all the religions, and I, even as a teenager, identified the commonalities in all the religions, even indigenous societies. There's certain fundamental values that are common.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, I was very spiritual, but I didn't have one religion or one belief, mm-hmm. excluding anything else, you know. But I was definitely fascinated with, you could say, higher realities or higher forces of influence or higher sources of love.
Wow. So tell us some more about your book, Love is the Power, One Man's Journey to Heal the Heart of Humanity.
The book is, it uses love and power. Obviously, love is the power. So it was a bold title, and my publishers were almost insistent that I use that title.
Mm-hmm.
What the book goes into is, you could say, a more complete definition of what love is. Like I mentioned, I have a daughter, and she's 12 years old, and now she's got a file on her little iPad that says, "Cute boys I love." So, and I'm like, oh, no, you know. I double-click, and there's all these Justin Bieber lookalikes. And
yeah.
So I'm not going to say you don't really love them. You know, so love is one of those words that really can span something almost trivial to completely profound. The book goes into the profound state, the fact that there is a basis of our very existence that is, that I call love. And once we realize that, mm-hmm. and or we can realize it in a progression, more and more we realize it, we understand that humans are built to love. We are built to express those values,
mm-hmm.
that are included in statements of love, compassion. Now that doesn't mean, and I got into a debate, I was misunderstood a couple weeks ago, and I want to just preempt that. It doesn't mean that when we are feeling love or in a state of love, and we love as we relate to whoever's in our environment, and we have special loves like my daughter, my wife, and we have, you know, love of humanity, it does not mean that we become unaware of danger in the environment. Mm-hmm. So love doesn't leave when there's a threat. For instance, if somebody threatens my daughter, I'm going to be this fierce, you know, Papa Bear, and I'm going to do whatever I can to protect my daughter or myself in situations. And there's a lot of craziness still going on this planet. We can come back to that subject, and there's a lot of internal turmoil that humans, we all are sharing with our wounds. So there's aspects of love that can look like ferocity and look like boundaries, or are boundaries that are required for our safety in our life. So when I talk about love, it's not just this kind of mushy, I love everyone, and anybody can do whatever they want. I'm not talking about that kind of love. If that's love at all, that's probably something else.
Okay. And I want to know about the quantum code technology and basically what is it, you know, if you can give us kind of, I'm sure it's very intense, but we love just kind of a layperson's definition.
Sure. It's actually, it's remarkably simple. It can go into complexity, and it does go into complexity. But let's just say you're out in nature and you're away from computers and power lines and all that stuff that's just approached humanity and saturated humanity for over the last 100 years. So we remember these natural, you know, out of Hawaii or wherever we're in nature. That's a simple state. That's a simple environmental condition that we like, most of us. We just feel more at home. We feel more relaxed. There's nature. Now, if we analyze what is behind, and I hinted at this before, if we analyze, there are actually specific frequencies and geometries that are encoded in natural laws that govern how the winds and how the oceans and how the waves are forming. If we just take one series of ocean waves and we analyze them mathematically, then it becomes more complex, but there's a consistent common set of mathematics that are that can be analyzed in nature. There's only a little over 100 of them, and they are found in how each one of our cells grows into an organ, into a body. It analyzes, and it's similar to how plants grow. It's just a fascinating science. So quantum code technology is those frequencies, those codes, those geometric ratios that are nature, or you can say are found in nature. Really, they are nature, you know? They're the expression of nature. Then when we go in there and analyze, they become geometries and
interesting
mathematics. So what I did with some really smart partners, Dr. William Tiller, Professor William Tiller at Stanford University, one of the most brilliant people I've ever met, working with him and others, we were able to emulate or broadcast those same frequencies that are found in natural environments through different applications and through a phone app. So the phone app quantum code technology, which you asked about, is now an app on your phone. So just a quick kind of comparison. So our cell phones, everybody has one now almost, right?
Pretty much.
Cell phones didn't grow out of our bodies. They didn't grow out of the gardens. So there are energies that are not congruent with nature. And I'm not saying they're bad, they're different. You know, these man-made or human-made technologies, they're not following the patterns of nature. They don't have those geometries. So what we've done is we've found a way to broadcast those natural frequencies so the cell phone can receive them. And it's via an app, like you get an app for a game or a compass or this or that Facebook app. You get it on your phone, you turn it on, and so it begins to broadcast those frequencies. We actually feel like a common experience is that we feel like we're away from our computers, or we don't even have our cell phones, that we're out in nature. That's what that quantum code technology is.
Do we hear the sounds, or they just are, and they just affect our cells?
They're subtle frequencies, so they're non-audible. But they are the same energies and ratios in nature.
I'm totally going to download this. This is fantastic.
Wait, now, this is different than the Heart Plus app that you also developed.
It is, yeah. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, it's the same.
So. Oh, yeah, that's the name of it. That's our layperson's understanding. Okay. The Heart
Right,
Plus
app. That's the name of the app. Yeah, I should say that. That's the name of the app. The technology is quantum code technology. You can go to the App Store now. We just got it working day before yesterday. You can go to the Apple Store for $1.95, I think, one-time fee. You get this app, and you So you have those energies, and we've done a 2-year scientific double-blind study that was published in a medical journal that showed that people with the app, and we had fake apps and did the double-blind control, people with the real app, their physical hearts actually improved. It was a groundbreaking study by Dr. Beverly Rubick from the University of California, biophysicist, and she did this study and found that with the app on, these natural frequencies, an index called heart rate variability, which is just the state of stress your heart is in. So if the, if your heart is has a low heart rate variability, it means it's more stressed and you're more apt to have a heart attack. If it's less stress, you're healthier. So by over 30% of the participants in the study, their hearts actually were healthier and you became less stressed.
That's so phenomenal.
We didn't even know it was going to be that much.
Oh my God, that's great.
Wow.
That's kind of like a good side effect of this, right?
That's
healthy hearts.
So exciting. Wow. Good for you.
That's so nice.
Ingenious.
I love
this. Is beautiful.
I want to talk a little bit about TM also. So transcendental meditation. So I also practice, and I always felt like I should have been 100% born in like the 60s and 70s. Like I'm such a hippie at heart, and you know, my parents were like making fun of me when I said 10 years ago, like, oh, I'm going to do TM. You know, they were like, that was my generation. You know, it's really funny, but I'd love to hear about your experience and all that good stuff.
What a, you know, so like I hinted earlier, I was born in the 50s and I grew up in the 60s, 70s. And just as a kind of a funny aside, now we can be on the air here and say something and laugh about it. But when I first started doing TM, 1976, my father and some of his buddies who fought in World War II, you know, were convinced that meditation was a communist plot.
Oh, my.
To pacify the youth of America so the Russians could come over and just take over. I mean, he was, because it was so esoteric, was so just spooky and weird, and here we are, the word meditation is no longer a threat to most of us. But anyway, I had to go through that phase of, no, Dad, I'm not going to allow the, you know, the communists to kill us.
Wow.
You know, I'm not going to just space out and, but bless his heart, I learned TM in 1976. It was I was going through one of my dark nights of the soul, very troubled. What I love about transcendental meditation is the fact that if you're doing it correctly, you're concentrating. You're not efforting. Most people are thinking that you have to concentrate on mantra or you know, it's just the opposite. If you close your eyes and you wait, usually there'll be a thought there. Now, we didn't say, I'm going to think now. Here's that thought. You know, it just happens. Our minds just bring in a thought. We notice that. That's the key. We notice it. We don't just, oh, now what am I thinking about? And still go off on that thought. We notice, oh, there's a thought. And then when we notice it, then we easily replace the thought with a mantra. And then we begin to see the more subtle layers of our own consciousness, our own minds, and it releases a lot of stress in the process. So I've always loved that technique.
And are you still practicing?
I do.
That's great.
Yeah. I went through a phase. I tried everything else, you know, any technique which uses our own ability to direct attention, you know, at will, increases our self-awareness. Most people don't know that they can do, or some people don't even practice, they don't even know that they can consciously like stop breathing or breathe deeply or put their attention on their knees or their, you know, consciously point our attention. Most of us are just responding, reacting, and it's part of the work you're doing, both of you, in your own work with people's pain and troubles and how to enjoy a relationship more. It is using that self-awareness, using the ability to choose thoughts or to place attention in certain areas in a more favorable way, or a way in which has favorable outcomes. The key is how to use your awareness, how to have that attention change and to notice when we're when we've forgotten and when we're tied up with our negative feelings or emotions or program, you know?
It's a very nice nice explanation. Yeah. We're speaking with Robert Williams, the author of Love is the Power, One Man's Journey to Heal the Heart of Humanity. And there's several things we still have to get into here. But I want to say that there's a part of your book kind of a little bit past the middle where you have all these wonderful pictures.
Love the photos.
One of them, they're black and white. They totally remind me of the 60s and that era. And you're playing the saxophone. So tell us about your love of the saxophone.
I grew up, as I mentioned, as a really odd duck. I was seeing nature spirits and fairies and whatever you want to call them.
Fairies.
I was seeing things.
Wait, please
fairies,
teach me how to see fairies.
She loves fairies.
Someday I must see a fairy. It's my only wish. My only unfulfilled wish.
They are
wish.
Real. Let's just, they are real and they're imaginary too. But what is true from my perspective and many others is that we're not alone here. There are beings that enjoy this planet and enjoy our reality that are we are not able to see them with our physical eyes. But I bet you if we had a show of hands, you know, in your audience, if we could actually do that, how many people have like seen something, an aura or a fairy or a little nature spirit or something in the woods? I once was in an auditorium of almost 10,000 people, and I bet you 70-80% raised their hand.
Wow.
But wow. So I grew up in that world more than my physical reality, I grew up and I lost that lightness of being and that freedom or that innocence that I felt in nature, and I only found it by playing music.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't every time I picked up my saxophone. My father gave me a saxophone when I was 7, so I started playing that, and there's a certain point, and if you're a are you either of you musicians?
No.
I was a budding pianist as a child, but my father sort of traumatized me and would sit in the living room and say false every time I made a mistake.
No. Oh, that kills me.
So I do have some musical talent, but it's totally undeveloped.
We all have musical abilities, but that's a different conversation.
Yes.
You know, if I had an hour with you, you'd be doing something musically and you'd be having fun and be sounding good. But we'll do that someday. But when I would play my saxophone, at least consistently, there would be these moments where I felt like I wasn't playing, and there was something happening that was more than there's you know, little Bobby Williams, and he knows his scale, and he's going to play this or that. Something is greater when we have that relationship with art that I know in. At least intuitively, we all know what we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
So I became obsessed with that because I didn't have that feeling doing other things as a child.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up, couldn't wait to come home and practice. And, and then on and on and on, and I can get to the Beach Boy scene. But that's why I music. And then I think all of us have been in a concert. I bet you. All of us have been to a concert where there's maybe, 10,000 people, one of these bigger concerts, even more.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, something happens, and we're all like one with the music.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've been to many concerts as a part of the audience, but I've had the unique pleasure and privilege of being in a Beach Boy concert as a musician in the back. I was in the back. I was in the horn section, so the lights weren't on me, so I was a little bit less nervous and stuff.
Yeah.
We'd come to a place in the concert, and it was often playing the song Good Vibrations, but sometimes other songs, and something would just click.
Mm.
It wasn't that we knew the song better or we were playing it more efficiently, whatever. There was something, and especially the guys in the horn section, we'd look at each other. We're playing, and we just, this is it. This is it. There's some zone here we've gotten into.
It's
and the ticket sellers and the security people, you look out, and it's just an awesome. Everybody was in this higher state of consciousness, and nobody was thinking, I betcha, nobody was thinking, what about that guy over there? I think he did, if I wonder what political views he has, or what, right. What am I going to, maybe that guy over there is going to steal from me. We were, those thoughts, or those fears, you could say, were outshined by the collective experience of music. We can have collective experiences in all kinds of ways, and because I was there and I remember it, that palpable, transcendental, we are all one, and we're all singing and swaying together. And then even cooler, after the concert was over, after the encore, people would walk out and they were more loving.
So sweet.
They were just in this high state, and then, you know, everybody goes in their cars and life continues. But it's a hint that collective consciousness is powerful and can if the tide raises, for instance, all the boats on it just raise naturally. And that's one of the reasons that the technology is important for me, and I think is important for others. And also one of the reasons I wrote the book and talking to you and your work, where we have this innate hope or this innate intuition that life can be better, that we can raise consciousness, and cruelty and suffering can decrease.
I absolutely love that. And I am absolutely obsessed with psychics and clairvoyance. And so do you still experience any of that?
I do. You know, it's like anything. We all have our gifts. For the first half of my life, I didn't know how to interpret clairvoyance, didn't know how to interpret auras. You know, I would just see things and I would try not to focus on it because it was too confusing, and I couldn't pay attention to what the person was physically saying because I was seeing all this other stuff. Then I found a teacher, and I learned how to use the clairvoyance for good reasons, I still do that. And but it's just like, how can I say, you know, I have a really good dentist. You're going to wonder, how on earth is he going to relate to clairvoyance? I walk in and he says, you know, Robert, you've had a stress day, or a patient walks in and he can just tell by the how, because he's trained to look at how the jaw, how your the tightness in your mouth, your chin. He's trained, he's studied the facial expressions and positions so much that he can read your whole life, you know? So like that, he's not clairvoyant. I thought he was when I went in there. I thought he was. Well, he did this and that. But I could just tell because you're overbite or this or that. So like that, I had to learn about subtle energies and clairvoyance. And I got to a certain point where, okay, I can use that to help people. And it's also important for me to figure out how to live a normal life and how to have conversations. And that was a big deal for me. That was harder for me, actually.
Makes sense. Unbelievable.
Well, especially because of your story about Ying. Why don't you tell our audience about Ying?
Jing, yeah, or Ying?
Jing.
Jing.
Do you pronounce it Jing?
Jing, yeah.
Jing, okay.
So the backyard, that's where I loved being all the time growing up. And those were the times of nature spirits and spinning things and all kinds of aspects of nature that were not seen by other people. Jing actually was a very special being because he had more of a body, and he would interact with me directly. So he would point out things and take me here and there. He was one of these nature spirits that wanted to help humans, and I happened to be one of those. And so he would point out what was going on in the backyard during different times. One of the coolest things, and he would like show me and teach me by experience. One time it was raining, and he was very excited, came and got me. I was digging in my hole in the backyard, digging there, and he said, you motion, look. And so I went, followed him, and there was this rainbow. You know, we've all seen these wonderful rainbows, beautiful, wow, you know. Then he just kind of like, he didn't really talk, but he motioned and gestures a lot, made sounds. So I go, okay, beautiful rainbow. And then a couple days later, he kind of like, okay, my mom had the sprinkler on. And so it was no longer raining, but he then took me to this place where you could actually see a rainbow because of the sprinkler and the sun. So he kept his teaching, to make it a long story short, was that rainbows are always everywhere present. We can make one right in your studio or wherever you're at. We get the right water and the right amount of sunlight and the right atmosphere, a rainbow just shows up. So it's not like we create a rainbow or the water creates a rainbow. The water and sun in the environment becomes positioned in a certain way that the rainbow is revealed. It's realized, and it's a simile to our consciousness, that as we grow in consciousness, we see things, we understand things that have always been there, but hidden because we just weren't ready, or we were too stressed out, or for whatever reason. But that was what one of the things that Jing showed me, this idea that things are already there. Mm-hmm. Things are already there. Mm-hmm. We just need the right consciousness. I needed to be awake to see the rainbow. We need the right environment, the sun, the water, and then these beautiful colors.
So
that's one
lovely
example of Jing.
So we're pretty open, Dr. Deborah and I, but I'm wondering, I can imagine...
Speak for yourself.
No, I'm pretty open.
No, we are.
But I can imagine you probably faced a ton of skepticism when you shared your experiences.
Oh, yeah.
So can you describe a little bit about what that was like?
Well, you know, I took the easy route. After a while, I just never shared these experiences because of that. The book was written, and now I'm talking on your radio show, because I believe the receptivity is there. I'm still faced with skepticism, and I had a debate with a psychologist, and he said, you know, it's impossible. All those things you're talking about, Robert, it's just a brain chemistry. You've got something wrong with your pituitary, and this is all inside your brain. You're imagining this. And you know what, Dr. Deborah and Kelly, it doesn't really matter to me. You know, I kind of like said, well, what about this? And my daughter can see things, and we both follow nature spirits in the backyard. So are we both brain chemically weird at the same time?
Right.
You know, my teacher, we would say... But I didn't feel like going there. I just said, yeah, well, maybe it is my brain core. I mean, but do you feel like I'm a threat to you? Mm-hmm. I mean, do you like me? And he goes, oh, yeah, I think you're a good guy. I go, well, that's what it's about. You know, I love you, man. It's okay. I don't care if it's brain chemistry or fairy dust. We're here to have a good time. We're here to love as much as we can. But to answer your directly, oh, yeah, in high school, are you kidding me? My mom actually thought I was mentally retarded and had me checked out. Thought I had a brain tumor, but all those were negative. And so then I thought, I think I should just keep these things to myself.
Mm.
Well, your brilliance is certainly shining on this show, and I would love it if you shared a little bit more of your brilliance about how you restore the molecular relationships of H2O to match those of pristine healing waters around the planet.
Thank you for your kindness. That was quite a statement. I don't consider myself brilliant. I think these technologies and these insights have happened in spite of me. I know how to get out of the way. I know how to let go of thinking and that kind of thing. But to answer your question, water is life. We are the water planet. Earth is the water planet. Our bodies at least are 75% water. I've heard some scientists say we're, by number of molecules, H2O molecules, we're like 97% water.
Wow.
So, of course, water is an important thing. And just to, so I became very fascinated with water, my own healing, and the qualities of water. I went to certain places and drank healing water, so-called healing water, waters that were blessed, and I was sensitive enough to, there's a difference, you know, it wasn't fakery or placebo. It was a different quality of water.
Wow.
So I began studying with another brilliant guy, Dr. Rustin Roy at Pennsylvania State University, who had been looking at waters for over 40 years, the different kinds of water from Lourdes and these pristine healing sources at Mount Shasta and so forth. Was there a molecular difference in those waters? Now, let's just assume that we've taken all the pollutants out. We know that those are bad, you know, terrible mm-hmm. stuff that gets into water. So let's filter the water. Now let's just look at the water molecules and the trace mineral molecules that are in the water. Is there a difference between the healing waters from Lourdes or Mount Shasta and water that's been purified from your kitchen sink? There's a big difference, it turns out. There's a huge difference, and it opens up this whole conversation. Well, there's a difference. Does it make any difference for your health?
Mm-hmm.
That's another conversation. So there's definitely a molecular difference, and you, via Raman spectroscopy, which is a way to look at molecular structure through light, it gets a bit complicated there. So number one, there is a difference. Now, there's a little debate whether the difference is good or bad or indifferent mm-hmm. to a human being or an animal or a plant. We've been doing research on that for years, and plants grow more quickly. So I guess I don't want to get off on too many tangents. Water has a potential when water, you could say, comes out of a pure source or down from the mountain. It twirls. It goes in these vortices. That's one of the laws. When you open your bathtub plug, you see it swirls down. Mm-hmm. That's one of these interesting geometries that I referred to earlier. Why doesn't it just go down straight, right? There's a natural mm-hmm. vortice that water flows and air and all kinds of things follow. So when water comes from mountains or even from springs, it will twirl. It will go in a vortice. That's how it travels. And that structures the water, the molecular relationship, if it's spun mm-hmm. in a certain way or goes through these vortices. And if it's stagnant for a while, it loses that structure. If it goes through different processes, it loses it.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're doing now is restoring the structure of water through these different methods to match the pristine, pure waters from nature, these healing waters.
So is there a particular type of water that you recommend while you're in this process that people drink?
Yeah. There's a lot out there that are pretty good, and we're developing products. We're not quite ready to go to market, but I can say, in general, if you can, there's devices out there that make water go through a spinning process. So first of all, you got to get it pollutant free. You know, mm-hmm. no chlorine and there's pharmaceutical waste and stuff. So there's filters out there that can deal with that. Then there's a way that, I think if you Google it, there's structuring
mm-hmm.
water machines that structure the water. And without going into specific companies, that's what I would say
okay.
is healthier, in my opinion.
Cool.
Structured water.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you know that Tiffany, my daughter, and Michael regularly bring down their own huge supply of water from spring water?
Uh-huh.
They live up north. And she says, Mom, drink this water. It's better. Mom,
yeah,
drink
I believe
this water.
It. I believe
my daughter's an Ayurveda practitioner.
Yeah. Well, do you notice a difference with that water?
Well, she doesn't. She brings it for her and her sweetheart. She shares
she
it.
Doesn't share
she doesn't
it with you.
Leave it with me.
Right. She's like, fend for
you gotta,
yourself.
You got to sneak in there.
Yeah. I mean, it's totally tasty for sure. But you know what,
you'll
Robert? Hard to believe, but we're out of time.
No.
So, yes, I know. So we've left the last minute. If you can kind of tell our listeners what your website is and where we can buy the book and the app and all that good stuff.
Loveisthepower.com. Mm, Loveisthepower.com. It's all there. App, book, mm-hmm. information on the technology, some other things.
By the way, I looked up the app while we were on there. You want to look up one, so ONE08, and then Heart Plus app, because you're going to get a lot of like heart monitors and things like that.
So, oh, okay.
Yeah. So just to be a little more specific.
You're more up to date than I am. Thank you for that.
Of course. Yeah. So that our listeners can find it.
Yeah. Fabulous.
But
thank you so much.
You're such a gem, and we love your energy and love what you're doing. So thank you so much.
It's been a privilege. You guys are awesome. I love you both, and thank you to your audience.
Thank you so much. So interesting.
Okay. Oh, who's on our show next week?
Oh, I don't know. Was this my outline?
No.
Is it my fault?
It's my fault.
Oh, good. I feel better.
Totally my fault.
So next week's is Samantha Edis, The Pie Life. So it's basically talking about balancing life and career. And then my friend Christina is going to come and Yay. Also co-host with all of us. So
Beautiful.
It'll be tons of fun.
Okay, awesome.
Can't wait. All right. So all right. Visit us on our Twitter at DocTherapist1, Instagram at Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly. Thanks so much.
And a prayer for Prowler.
Yes.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.